A devotee should always try to hear about spiritual matters and should always utilize his time in chanting the holy name of the Lord. His behavior should always be straightforward and simple. And although he is not envious but friendly to everyone, he should avoid the company of persons who are not spiritually advanced. Purport: in order to advance in spiritual understanding, one has to hear from authentic sources about spiritual knowledge. One can understand the reality of spiritual life by following strict regulated principles and by controlling the senses. To have control, it is necessary that one be non-violent and truthful. Refrain from stealing, abstain from sex life, and possess only that which is absolutely necessary for keeping the body and soul together. One should not eat more than necessary. He should not collect more paraphernalia than necessary. He should not talk unnecessarily with common men. And he should not follow the rules and regulations without purpose. He should follow the rules and regulations so that he may actually make advancement. There are 18 qualifications mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, among which is simplicity. One should be without pride. One should not demand unnecessary respect from others. And one should be non-violent. One should be very tolerant and simple. One should accept the spiritual master. And one should control the senses. These are mentioned here and in Bhagavad Gita as well. One should hear from authentic sources how to advance in spiritual life. Such instructions should be taken from the Acharya and should be assimilated. It is especially mentioned here, Nama Sankirtanach Chak. One should chant the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Either individually or with others. Lord Chaitanya has given special stress to chanting of these holy names of the Lord as the basic principle of spiritual advancement. Another word used here is ardhavena, meaning without diplomacy. A devotee should not make plans out of self-interest. Of course, preachers sometimes have to make some plan to execute the mission of the Lord under proper guidance. But regarding personal self-interest, a devotee should always be without diplomacy, and he should avoid the company of persons who are not advancing in spiritual life. Another word is Arya. Aryans are persons who are advancing in knowledge of Krishna consciousness as well as in material prosperity. The difference between the Aryan and non-Aryan, the Sura and the Asura, is in their standards of spiritual advancement. Association with persons who are not spiritually advanced is forbidden. Lord Chaitanya advised, Asatsanga Tyag. One should avoid persons who are attached to the temporary. Asat is one who is too materially attached, who is not a devotee of the Lord, and who is too attached to women or enjoyable material things. Such a person, according to Vaishnava philosophy, is a persona non grata. A devotee should not be proud of his acquisitions. The symptoms of a devotee are meekness and humility. Although spiritually very advanced, he will always remain meek and humble, as Kaviraj Goswami and all the other Vaishnavas have taught us by personal example. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that one should be humbler than the grass on the street and more tolerant than the tree. One should not be proud or falsely puffed up. In this way, one will surely advance in spiritual life. The important principles by which we can make advancement in Krishna consciousness are being described. The two basic most prominent activities: hearing and chanting about Krishna, chanting the name of Krishna, are mentioned here. It's also mentioned arjavena, with straightforward behavior. Now, this is generally considered a sub-religious principle. That means moral behavior. Well, arjavena means simplicity in dealings. Simplicity in the sense that, well, if you say you're going to do something, you do it. If you owe some money to someone, you endeavor to repay it, like this. your word is trusted. Now, this is not in and of itself spiritual life. We find some people who are, of course, not very common in the modern world to find people who are honest, who are known to be honest, persons who you can swear by their character. It's unusual to find such persons, although there used to be many who were known for their good character, that you can depend on them. If they say they'll do something, they'll do it. This about 200 years ago, there was a British writer who wrote about India. He said that the character of the people is so much better than in our country. There's no beggar, you'll never see a beggar, which in England there must have been at the time, because he was comparing. And everyone is honest. I don't know what happened in the meantime, because nowadays there are plenty of beggars and difficult to find someone who's really honest. Things have changed, but he was saying how the character and the character of women was very much noted, how much they were so much better, they're so much more cultured than the average British woman. Some British writers noted. But nowadays those qualities have gone. They do not in and of themselves, these such qualities do not in and of themselves constitute spiritual love. One who is chanting the holy names of Krishna and endeavoring to advance in devotional service, even if his basic character background is not so good, is better situated than one who's very honest and moral but who has no particular interest in hearing and chanting about Krishna. However, it's expected that one who hears and chants about Krishna, he overcomes his lower qualities, because this deceitful behavior, misbehaving with others, trying to exploit others, dominate over others for one's own egoism, these are not qualities of a spiritually advanced person. These demonstrate that one has some other motive than that to serve Krishna. So if one is actually hearing and chanting about Krishna, the heart should become purified and one should overcome these lower qualities. And the absence of such qualities is so prominent in the modern age that practically this Radhana Swami, whose Chopati group is very famous, there so many people are coming. They base their preaching, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Apane Achare Prabhu Jibere Shikai, on their behavior. Now, when that said Apane Achare, that means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught by his own behavior. That means not just behaving nicely with people, so to speak, although sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to be very harsh also, as in the case of Chota Haridas, who was banished by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for a small fault and eventually, out of despair, committed suicide. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard, he said, well, that's good. So he appeared to be this... what is that? Kusam api komal, Pashan api kotor. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is famous as being soft as a lotus, but in this case he was hard like a stone. So when it said that Mahaprabhu taught by his behavior, that means by he showed how a devotee should always be engaged in hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. But this arjavam, which is a component of, as it said here, Arya Sangha. It's a component of the behavior which is expected of civilized people or people who have higher values than trying to exploit others or trying to enjoy this material world. Persons who are at least on the platform of dharma, generic dharma, that they behave straightforwardly. So I was saying about Ratana Swami is promoting this, at least within his group it's promoted. I asked one newcomer there that what is your goal of life? He said, to preach Krishna consciousness. I said, well, how do you propose to do that? And he said, by good behavior. Now that, as I said, it doesn't in and of itself constitute Krishna consciousness, but if it is there, then people will tend to note it. That's the idea. Of course, you have to go out and meet people and preach to them and distribute Prabhupada's books. And in Copenhagen earlier this year, someone asked that, well, previously we used to emphasize book distribution, now we emphasize good relationship among devotees with the idea that people will notice and they'll become devotees. But, yeah, I mean, you can sit at home and smile at each other all day as much as you like, but it's not, people aren't going to become devotees. You have to go out and meet people. That's not in and of itself our program for preaching. It's being nice to each other, you know, pass the salt and smile. But being nice to each other, we have to do activities also. It's not just being nice. It's very, as you spend your days, you rise, you chant a little, you cook something, you offer it, you eat it, you clean up, you take a little rest, and then it's time to cook again. So then you cook again and wash and very nicely serve the prasad to everyone, and then wash the pots, and then it's time for a little more kirtan, and then time to go to sleep. That's the whole day gone. So you can pass your whole day like that, a little bhajan and a little bhojan, and we have to go out and beg a little something also. So the whole day can go, and you can be very nice. But actually, I've seen in ashrams, I'm not thinking so much about ISKCON here, but so many ashrams in the course of traveling and preaching in India. There are ashrams in the West also, but I've hardly been to any, but I've been to many in India. And you can see in places where there's no real spiritual program, that's what they do. They live, they eat. And you were saying this, who is that you were telling me? Swami Narayan? They're in their ashrams. They go to arati for about 5 minutes in the morning, and that is their spiritual program. They don't have anything else. I was seeing we saw their ashram. And, you know, everyone, someone sitting out in the morning sun reading the newspaper and come back half an hour later and still reading the newspaper. So... And you obviously you won't find that people are becoming spiritually advanced like that. So you may say, well, in our ashrams, you know, people they may not be so peaceful, but the peacefulness of doing nothing is not spiritually advanced. Just. They're very peaceful. Why? Because no anxiety, nothing to do, food is coming, and you have a place to sleep, and everything is nice. So that's not spiritual advent. That's not even the mode of goodness. That's like, you know, it's like a pig is content if he has food. Annamai, the lowest level of existence, lowest level of consciousness. So people expect devotees to be well-behaved. They expect that devotees will be of better behavior. I remember Jnanananda Prabhu, this made me know, many years ago. You all know, they don't all know, but... not Jayananda, Jnanananda, my old friend. So he told me, he was opening a center in Newcastle in the north of England, and he had no money, and then he was by himself, and so sometimes he would come down to London to to the main center there, he would hitchhike. He didn't have any money. And one evening he was hitchhiking, and one lady stopped him, a middle-aged woman. She said, I wouldn't stop for anyone else, but by your dress I could see, you know, I'd stop for you. Then again I heard some, but then if you are dressed like that and as a monk, and then you behave in a way that people don't appreciate, they get upset more. I remember hearing that at the border between West Germany and, or going into Berlin, in the days when there was West Germany and East Germany, some devotees, there was a huge long line, and they had a program, it was getting later and later and later, and they just zipped up right to the front of the line. People were so, you know, in Germany where they're all, follow the rules and regulations. The people were very upset because you're supposed to be like detached. You don't care if you're late, or there's a misconception that you should just, devotees should just smile in all circumstances and everything is okay. It's a misconception that devotee doesn't get upset. Someone steals all the money in the collection. So Brajahari Prabhu was telling me that one of our ISKCON sannyasis, he gave 75 lakhs to someone with the idea this person would set up a business for maintaining their ashram, and he swallowed it. And Brajahari Prabhu was telling me, well, this sannyasi, he's very soft, and people like him, they give him donations, but so many times people cheat him. And then they just come and touch his feet and say, Maharaj, please forgive me. And he'll say, all right, all right. So Brajahari Prabhu asked him, why are you letting this person, or why are you so? He said, well, people will give more money, and he'll get his result. Krishna will look after him. Brajahari Prabhu said, Maharaj, that's not your money, that's ISKCON's money. You should be more careful. People are giving that to you, to serve Krishna. So even worse is when the devotee, people perceive that the devotees are cheating them. Actually, the devotee, if he uses the money for Krishna, then it's all right. We know that Tirumangai Alva, famous in this part of the world for securing funds by means that, at the World Parliament of Religions, it wouldn't be approved of, no doubt. Or practically no one would approve of it. Stealing the Buddha, gold Buddha deity, melting it down. I mean, that's like that would be considered a tremendous sacrilege. You know this word, sacrilege? You know this word? Sacrilege means to offend something which is sacred. It's something like, urinating on the Quran or something like that. So if you steal the Buddha deity and melt it down, that's considered very blasphemous. It's similar to blasphemy. But it's blasphemy is verbal and sacrilege is physical. So that can be done by devotees, but then they can do anything if it's actually done for Krishna, but the result may not be so good. In Assam, one of our godbrothers who recently passed away, he built the temple in Guwahati, in the capital, by taking loans from so many Marwari businessmen. They never paid it back. And then when they realized that he had no intention of paying it back, then they all became disappointed. If he had handled it better, they might have been pleased to donate it anyway. But somehow he didn't deal with them properly, and then he lost their support and got a bad name also particularly among that community. So I was saying that woman, she picked up Jananda Prabhu because she thought, well, seeing you, I can trust you. But then we find that many devotees who do business, several devotees told me who do business, they say that, well, you never deal with devotees because you can't trust them. They'll take goods and never pay for it. You'll find in the BBT also, they won't give books unless you have a covering letter, because they're afraid that so many people, so many devotees take books, which is Prabhupada's blood actually, BBT money, and then they don't pay. It happened to me so many times that someone was, you give them some money or you give them some books and they don't pay. And then you see them and say, oh, I don't have any money just now. And then, but it goes on for years and they have no intention. It becomes obvious at the time they took it that they had no intention. It was just straightforward deceit. And they may think, well, you know, I'm developing my center or whatsoever, and it's all Krishna's money. But then you can see the person, this kind of attitude, this kind of attitude, they think I'm sacred and everything I do is perfect, and doesn't matter if I lie or deceive another member of the society of ISKCON. So then how do they deal with the public and how do they deal with everyone? What is their motive actually? They may be doing hearing and chanting, but if their dealings are not good, then no one will trust them. You can be cheated once or twice, then you won't want, no one will want to deal with such a person. So this this proper behavior, that's also to be considered. Prabhupada said about smuggling, because in India it used to be that even if you had like a simple Timex watch from the West, people were there, they'll be looking at it and say they want to buy it, and they want it's anything from the West, sleeping bag, watch was a common thing, calculators when they came in, you know, just a cheap old calculator. So you can make a profit by bringing these things into the country and selling them. So some devotees thought, hey, we can make some money for Krishna. But Prabhupada warned not to do it. There was one so-called guru from India who went to the West. He was caught by the customs, and I don't know what happened. He was put in prison or fined or something. He was found guilty. And Prabhupada wrote, as one note, he said his whole reputation is spoiled now because of this. So he said, we shouldn't risk this. We shouldn't do this. Even though, theoretically, for Krishna, you can do. But then you have to see what is the public reaction also. Prabhupada wrote in one purport that the members of our society should be adored as being honest. So this hearing and chanting, that should go on. And even though one can do anything for Krishna, and practically speaking, in the modern world, unless you sometimes, it's very difficult to do anything without sometimes breaking the law or being deceitful in some way. It's, you know, just like in our land dealings in India, we're getting so many properties, and It's a cutthroat business, literally. In North India especially, I mean, there's so many killings every day over land disputes and the land mafia. In Tamil Nadu, not much killing, I think, but nasty dealings, that's for sure. But in Mathura district, for instance, it's very dangerous dealing in land. Our godbrother there, the Kshiradakshai Vishnu Maharaj, was reportedly murdered so that the people could take over his ashram. And that's not a rare occurrence. There's so many killings all over land and disputes and different mafias, power and this and that. So, and then underhand dealings and payment in black money and all this kind of thing. So, because the land market is dominated by these corrupt and what's the word? This feelingless people. That if we in land deals, we also, if we want to be totally clean, and you can't do anything. That's one instance. You have to. It may not be in every case, but in many cases you'll have to do something, or to get the registrar to register, you have to pay a bribe, otherwise they won't do it. They just won't do it. And so your whole work is just held up. It may be held up even for years. I heard that in one of our centers, we purchased some property years ago, and you go and it's still undeveloped, because someone else wants to get the property, and so they're paying off the registrar in the city office, so he won't give permission to develop it. So like this kind of thing can go on. So we may sometimes be forced to adopt illicit means, but the basic behavior of a devotee should be straightforward, follow the laws of the land as far as possible. Sometimes the laws of the land, they're demonic. In China, you're not allowed, I think it's no more than one child or two children, there's some law. So that means if it's one child and then you have a second pregnancy, then abortion is compulsory by law. Not in this country, but then sometimes I know of some cases of devotees taking their wife, sending her for abortion because they think we can't afford any more children. Devotees, yes. Horrible, huh? We can't afford, so that's enough. She's pregnant, so what to do? Because it's become socially acceptable. People in India don't think abortion is sinful. Or if they do, they just... the very concept of sin, it's not there. No one teaches it anymore. They just... this is sinful. No, it's this mayavad by which... whatever you like to do, everything is okay. It's just what you feel in your heart, this rascal Vivekananda. He said that it doesn't matter what you eat, you can eat any food. It's what matters is your consciousness. It doesn't matter what you do, but you should be in high consciousness. You're a rascal. And if you're in high consciousness, why do you eat meat? Yeah. So, even, you see, here it's talking about hearing about spiritual matters. Adhyatmikanu shavana. But all the acharyas, they state that to hear or to enter into or to begin to understand spiritual matters, it is necessary that one first have a basis in sadharan dharma, or or ordinary dharma, how do you translate that? We can say that sadharan means ordinary or general. We could say shastrically ordained proper behavior. We can say like that, dharma. We can try and define it like that, although it's a very... Dharma is a, it, the term encompasses several interlinked concepts. It's not just in English that it's difficult to define, even the even in Sanskrit that the acharyas say they try, you know, to define it fully is difficult. Therefore, how to understand it? Well, that is by following the Mahajanas. What is that verse? Dharma is in the heart. Dharma ohitesha. No, adhikovashe, not that verse. No, I'm getting mixed up with that. Shuto vibhinna. Tarko, tarka apratishta. Shuto vibhinna. That the one cannot understand the truth by simply by logical argument. And then again, Shruti Avibhinnaha, the Shastras, they say different things. And Nasav Rishi Yasya Matam Nabhinnam. And one is not really a good Rishi unless he could make some opinion different to everyone else. So then how to ascertain what is dharma? You see, I just said scripturally ordained proper behavior. But then Shruti Avibhinnaha, the Shrutis are different. And the Smritis are different. The shastrically ordained proper behavior is given in the Smritis. Manu Smriti is the most famous. Yajnavalkya Smriti, Parashara Smriti, Narad Smriti. There are so many. Then, dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapanta. One has to follow the behavior of the great souls. So, the great... Dharma is difficult to define because what constitutes dharma in one situation, proper behavior in one situation, will be different in another situation. The famous instance from the Mahabharata where generally lying is adharma, but the instance of not lying when one should have done to protect the man who is being chased by the thieves, because of the brahmana who had made a vow not to lie, maintained his vow, but then the man, as a result of him not lying, the man got killed, and therefore he had to go to hell because he failed to tell a lie when he should have done. So dharma, you don't know that story. I told it so many times, I thought everyone must know it. So Lord Krishna told this story to Arjuna, that a brahmana who lived at the edge of a village, by the edge of a village means that surrounded by forest, that was the general forest, or there may be some fields, but a lot of forest. So he made a vow never to tell a lie in his life. So one time a man came running up and said, "Where can I hide? I'm a merchant carrying so much gold and robbers are chasing me." So he said, "Go and hide in the forest over there. You can hide there." And a few minutes later, some robbers came up and said, "Did you see someone running? We're chasing him. We're robbers." He said, "Yeah, he went and hid over there." So they went there and killed him and took the money. So he never told a lie in his life and he went to hell. Because in that instance, he should have told a lie. He didn't know the principles of dharma. So one has to understand the principles. According to one's level of consciousness, that will be different. Lord Krishna himself told, "Kill Karna." He told Arjuna, "He's off his chair." Arjuna said, Karna said, "This is not dharma to kill me when I'm off my chariot and you're on the chariot." And then Krishna said, "Oh, where was your dharma when you and your group, they send the the Pandavas to burn in the house? Where was your dharma when you insulted, you cheated Yudhishthir in the gambling? Where was your dharma when Dushasan dragged Draupadi into the assembly? Where was your dharma when you surrounded Abhimanyu to kill him? Kind of nothing to say, just hung his head, Krishna told, kill him. So he's showing that adharma, that can be met with what would normally be considered adharma. And then at the end, when Krishna was accused, oh, you cheated and lied so many ways to kill the battle, I said, yeah, if we hadn't done the battle wouldn't have been won. Which means that in certain circumstances, the means justifies the end. The means were not strictly according to the rules of dharma. Of course, Krishna can make and Krishna can break. But he's acting as a human being. But the means can justify the end. So these are all complex questions. How to behave in any situation? One has to do so. One doesn't always have the opportunity. I mean, you may say, well, you should consult a guru. You don't always have the time to do so. Many times, you have to make a decision in a split second. One devotee in Belgium, he saw some robbers. They were robbing someone at knife point, mugging. So he intervened, and then he got cut up, and he almost died. He had to go to hospital. So, in the circumstance, it would have been better, in retrospect, it would have been better if he didn't intervene, because he was unarmed. They had knives, and they were desperados. You know that word? Desperado. You have it in your language? You can work it out. Yeah. Desperados mean people who'll do anything but to fulfill their, well, they're baddies. You know that word? The goodies and the baddies. So they're baddies. They're bad people. Will do anything bad. So it wasn't a very intelligent decision to make. If he had he was taking on two armed criminals. If he had been successful, people would have praised him, but the odds of him being successful were not very much. So, one has to make decision. I say, there's not always not guru there, therefore one has to do anushavanam, adhyatmika anushavanam. So one can understand what to be done, what not to be done. Krishnate akila cheshta, everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. How to act in every moment for the pleasure of Krishna. Often it's straightforward. At this time you should rise, it's early in the morning, you should rise. This time you should go to Mangal Arati. Often it's very straightforward. But when we have to go out in the world and preach, then so many situations arise and it can be difficult to know what to do, and like I say, you don't always get the opportunity to consult. And mistakes will be made. Mistakes means that whatever you decide to do, it can come out good, not so good, or terrible. There's a risk every time. So some mistakes will be made, or oftentimes things won't turn out so well. So it's easy to, you're saying, blame someone who's sitting and doing nothing. It's easy for them to blame. But then those who are taking the risk, they're the ones who are spreading Krishna consciousness. They're the ones who are doing something for the cause of Krishna. So we shouldn't be too quick to blame those who, even they make mistakes. Of course, if they go on and on making mistakes, then we should think that maybe they shouldn't be in a position of making decisions, they should learn something. But that requires some courage. Courage means to have faith that Krishna will help us and to take the risk for Krishna. Taking risks, mostly people, they, you know, just want to sit and have a peaceful life, but there's no risk, and then no one will disturb you, and you can live peacefully. But then again, the preaching won't be there. Prabhupada took the risk of going to the West. He could have died on the journey, or going even in the Bowery, and even the American people were. Even the American people were saying, Swamiji, don't go there, it's too dangerous. He wasn't disturbed. He said, I'm a Calcutta boy, I grew up. He grew up watching the prostitutes and the pickpockets and all this. He's right in the heart of Calcutta, Harrison Road, right in the business district, right in the center. But above, over and above being here, just being a Calcutta boy, he was a cowherd boy. So, you know, Krishna is protecting. So, that was where his courage came from. Others, that letter came to Prabhupada. He said he wanted to go to the West and preach. He sent to one of his godbrothers. And they said, well, first you come and join our mission and we'll give you a room, nice room to stay in. You know, Prabhupada, we wanted to go and preach. And then later on we can think about sending you to the West. He was trying to go to the West through his godbrothers, through one of their missions. He didn't have a mission. Then first you come and join, we'll give you a facility. Later we'll think about it. And Prabhupada didn't want to think about later, and he wasn't interested in having a good room. He already had a room to stay in. He didn't think that having a room was the purpose of his life. Whereas from that letter it would seem that some of his godbrothers thought that you know, that's the meaning of taking sannyas. You get a nice room to stay in. So, and Prabhupada had a different way. He wanted to take the risk. He's hearing and chanting, yes, but he wanted the whole world to hear and chant. So he took the risk. And he, many times he acted in a way which might seem not straightforward. You're just talking about straightforward behavior, but for preaching, Prabhupada had to do so many things. But people fully trusted him because he was near ahankar. He wasn't doing anything for his own sake, he was doing everything for Krishna. And that was apparent. To anyone who was anyone but anyone other than a real demon, and there are not that many in the world, they would appreciate that this is a genuine saintly person. And people who really never thought what it means to be a sadhu, or people who, for them, it's just not a consideration. They're just interested in pounds, shillings and pence. When you come in contact with Prabhupada, they can understand. This is someone special, different, and automatically commanded respect. Not just because he was elderly and aristocratic in his behavior, but his whole aura, his whole deportment was one of a goodness so intense that even ordinary people would be awed by that. So that can't be imitated. Or it can be imitated, but it's only imitation. These are some of the qualities which we are enjoined to. Some of the qualities and activities we're enjoined to make our life based on so that we can be devotees. By the mercy, as it said in the previous verse, by the mercy of the acharyas. Any question? And meanwhile, I'm sitting here. I came to Salem and I'm sitting. I'm talking about going out in the world, taking risk. I'm sitting. Well, I was traveling for a lot, but I'm writing also. That's also required. There's no question then? Catch the fish without getting wet. Well, that means we should go out into the world and make people Krishna conscious and not ourselves become entangled. Act in a way that others become Krishna conscious, not that we become entangled in their mundane way of life or their mundane complexities. Devotee also has to be careful not to be. We deal with people to try to help them to come to Krishna consciousness, but you have to be careful not to become involved in the complexities. Devotee has to be somewhat aloof. As a sannyasi, I get to hear so many things about people's personal, devotees, their personal lives, their family problems and this and that. But I don't try to get too much involved. I try not to get too much involved. Stay a little aloof, because you can't sort it. It's samsara dhavanala. It's the burning fire of material existence, and it can only be extinguished by the mercy of Krishna. Is that you try and, I mean, to some extent, you know, there's this counseling and all this kind of thing. That's there to some extent, but it's very complex, and you know, someone will say something and someone will deny it, and then they'll say, well, yes, actually it was like this, and they'll say no, but then you have to remember this, and it just goes on. Extremely complex. So it's especially brahmacharis and sannyasis, they shouldn't get involved in all these devotees' complex householders, devotees, their complex affairs. Stay aloof. Can give some general advice, encouragement, mostly encourage them to engage in hearing and chanting more, because this will go on. These complexities of family life, it will go on. Yes. Unless the devotees' concern become more Krishna conscious, but then, even then, you know, it may be that, and there are so many things, like there may be three brothers and two of them are trying to, they're conspiring to cheat the other one who's a devotee out of his share of the property or something like that. And you might say, well, just let him, but then why? Because, you know, he also needs something for his family. There's so many cases like that. Sometimes I do give some advice, but you don't want to get too much. You're just like, you know, someone, exactly that case actually, someone is trying to take the whole property and they're asking me, I said, no. Why should you? Why should you just... They think because you're a devotee, you're soft, they can just cheat you. Why? You also have a family, you have to look after them. Why should you? And he said, oh, it's so much headache dealing with them. Yeah. It doesn't mean you should just let them run over you and cheat you. It's so distressing for them. Their family member, they couldn't imagine they would behave like this, but they do. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.